It's HBR, All Things Considered, and I'm Dave Lawrence. Today we are wrapping up 2 days of covering the return of Def Leppard, one of the biggest selling music acts of all time, having sold over 100 million albums and playing the Blaisdell Arena tonight and tomorrow, their first time here in 35 years, where they will be performing their release Hysteria in its entirety, a record that itself sold 25 million copies. Yesterday, we spoke with guitarist Phil Collin. You can hear that archived online. And today, we are grateful to welcome the voice of the band for all these years, Def Leppard vocalist and frontman Joe Elliott. Joe, welcome, and thanks for doing this.
You're welcome.
You guys haven't played here since September 1983 for a pair of shows at the same arena. Do you have any memories?
Yeah, there's inkling of memory. I mean, it is ridiculous to think. If you'd have said to me back then, we won't see you for 35 years, I would have thought, as a 23-year-old kid, as I was at the time, I'm 24, I'd have been like saying, 35 months? Wow, that's like 10 lifetimes away.
Right. You know?
And then I think back now, and it's like, we're still here doing this, and it's mad that we haven't been back in 35 years, but business being what it is. I mean, you can't just turn up with a truck and go, right, since we're playing, it's like, it's a weird one, really, but yeah, I remember it well because we just finished the mainland tour at Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego. That was like 55,000 people. And we had these two shows set up as a kind of a thank you stroke holiday for the crew, where we had 4 days before the shows and then two gigs. And we were in a hotel that had penguins in the pool. I mean, it was crazy, you know, little renting jeeps, and we had a great time. It was all a bit of a whirlwind, the whole tour, because you have to remember that it started off for us at the Marquee in London, you know, the legendary Marquee, in front of about 800 people in February, and then by September, which is a mere 9 months later, we were doing 55,000 in San Diego. It was like what we used to read about for bands like Led Zeppelin, and it was just ridiculous, you know. And then we were in Hawaii soaking it up and letting it all sink in, I suppose. But I have hazy, very positive memories of my last visit.
Well, I love the penguins get a little mention in there. That's pretty cool. Sounds like you guys are probably over at the Hilton. They've moved the penguins since then, thankfully, but still cool that you can remember that.
Oh, yeah, because they were kind of vicious.
Sounds like a band. A good match for Def Leppard, Vicious Penguins.
Yeah, indeed. It's the opening act.
And your musical history, it's great to have your memories. And your history goes back a lot further than many fans may realize. And before the band's evolution, one of the things that really impressed me, we owe your mother for a critical decision to get an acoustic guitar at 8 years old. Tell us that story and what else had exposed you to music prior to that, that sort of was an equally significant way to get you started.
Well, I think you are born with a vocation. And if you're lucky and born in the right place in the right time, I've often used the analogy, whoever is the best brain surgeon in the world didn't train to be the best brain surgeon. He was born to be the best brain surgeon. He just needed to be in the right place at the right time. Otherwise, we could all train. For people to just get to be that one guy that lands on the moon or the guy that can fix your brain if it's broken, something you're born with an ability to do should you get the opportunity. And I think for me, music's always been that thing. You know, I was never going to be a brain surgeon. So, you know, but I'm told by old relatives when I was younger, grandparents and aunties and uncles, that the second that I could walk, I used to make my way over to the radio and try and either turn it up or change the channel. So it was quite obvious that I was musically inclined. And my parents were never professional, but they were both very keen musicians stroke players. They both played the piano. My dad was great on a harmonica. And at the age of 36, my mum decided to buy a guitar. And she bought one through a catalogue, and she taught herself to play it. And I was transfixed watching her fingers on this thing. And she was learning to play Pete Seeger and Bob Dylan and Joan Baez songs and just Americana folks. And I just blurted out one day, show me how to play it. You know, my fingers weren't big enough to stretch, but I gave it a go, and I learned to play the three essential chords that will get you about 2,000 songs on the go, C, G, and D, you know, or maybe an F. And eventually, I said I wanted a guitar, and my parents very sensibly said, well, learn to play, and we'll get you one for Christmas. So, of course, then I really studied with my mom how to play the chords, but the essential difference between, say, me and say, a Phil Collins or a Steve Clark or Vivian Campbell or Pete Willis or whatever, none of them really wanted to go widdly, 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 widdly. For me, I wanted to be able to accompany myself singing. So all I ever learned to play was just background chords, just rhythm guitar. I wrote my first song when I was eight and a half. Then I started listening more than playing. I never really took it much further than once I got my head around how it worked. But I had the knowledge of knowing how it worked and the theory of music, and I knew what I wanted to do. So that was all part of the embryonic me, if you like, as a teenager. And I was actually quite an obsessive person, because what would happen was I'd be all about the music until Wimbledon came on, and then I was all about the tennis. And then when the football season started, I'd be all about the football. I wasn't really focused. Right. But once the opportunity with these guys to put this band together came around, it was just falling into place. There were no adverts put in the papers. We just bumped into each other. That's where my focus really started there, with that August of 77 when I met Pete. He introduced me to Rick Savage and the then drummer Tony, and we literally named the band that night, and we started taking the thing as far as we could take it.
You mentioned it, the band's name, an original one too, Def Leppard. You came up with it then in the summer of 1977, from what you were saying, you were breaking up a little bit. But if you could explain what would be coming up with a brand name that here you are all these years later, that's been your place of business, it's been your calling card, it's a name known around the world to millions of people. It's a pretty important thing that you came up with.
It wasn't 77. I came up with it in 75 when I was still at school. It was an art class.
You were in an art class?
When you're in art, the great thing about art is it's subjective. So you can talk to the teacher and go, look, I don't want to do this bowl of fruit. Can I do a rock poster? Sure, whatever you want. Okay. So I do that, and I spend the whole term just making up posters for bands that I'd either seen or wish I'd seen. And then eventually I just started making names up because I got bored. And one of them just happened to be Def Leppard, which we do spelled correctly at the time. I just thought it sounded good. It had a nice phonetic sound to it, like Led Zeppelin did, or the Beatles. And it was Tony, our original drummer, who suggested we change the spelling, because there was a tendency for a lot of British bands to have similar names, but they were all very punk, Flying Lizards or the Boomtown Rats or whatever. We changed the spelling. When we first had it written out on the wall of our rehearsal room, it was spelt directly, and Tony just drew a line through the A and stuck a line down the O on the P. So we could still see the original spelling, but he had graffiti on top of it, if you like. It wasn't until maybe a month later when somebody wrote it out again that we noticed it. Well, it looked like Led Zeppelin. At the time, we all went, well, rather looked like them than the Flying Lizards, so stick with it, you know. Didn't really want to change the name anymore. I mean, it's a silly name, really, but look at racehorses. I don't think I've ever seen one that doesn't have a silly name.
Right.
They all seem to work.
That's great. You came up with it in 1975 then. That's when you really came up with the name.
Yeah, I was probably 14 years old.
Unbelievable.
But you're giving it a lot of stock that it doesn't really deserve. It was just two words. It could have been anything. But it's just the fact that it becomes iconic now. But at the time, it was like, you know, whatever, just grew into itself.
It's a great way that you put it, because that's exactly how, when I think it was Jimmy Page or somebody was describing how this band was going to work, somebody said, oh, that'll go over like a Led Zeppelin. And lo and behold, that name, just like you
were... Yeah, it was Keith Moon.
So you know what
that's
I mean.
The Keith Moon that's going out. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's the way to do it. Happy accidents are always the best way.
Happy accident. I love the terminology for that. And it's a good way to describe it. It's a good way to leave it. We're all going to get to experience it at these shows. Giving you a high five and a big hug, Joe. Thanks for talking. I really appreciate it.
Man.
Great stories
okay,
today.
Thank you. Appreciate it, mate.
Take care, Joe. Aloha,
right,
brother.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Aloha. This is Joe Elliott from Def Leppard. It's All Things Considered, and we are with our good friend, Dave Lawrence.
Step inside, walk this way, you and me, babe.